Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's another week of Auto Central SA's number one motoring podcast powered by Auto Trader. And we've got a whole new revamped show. And I'm glad to bring you the new version of our show. And I have with me the none other than Wandi Lesishi. How's it, Wandi?
It's a new week. It's a new show. Yeah, I just can't wait to get intimate. Well, let me rephrase, intimate about cars with you again on this fresh new show.
Wandi wants to get intimate with me. Well, yeah, let's see if we can get... Let's see if we can get intimate. So so we've changed the show's structure a little bit. We are we're moving from a one-hour show every alternate week to a 30-minute show weekly, and it'll be played out at 9 a.m. on Monday mornings. And you can go to the regular platforms, iTunes, and what's the other one, Wandi? Spotify.
You can find us on Spotify. You can find us basically on Iono. Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Where they stream podcasts, we're going to be there. We're going to be there just talking nonsense about cars.
Exactly. Exactly. We're everywhere. So just go and check us out. Go and do some Google searching. And then I'm your new show host. Old show host, new show host, George Meany, and I will be joined every week by Wandi Lesishi. And so in this week's show, Wandi, we've got a little bit about the history of cars in South Africa. You know, where do cars actually come from? Where, you know, what when did cars hit South African shores? What are the key milestones? You know, where do you remember?
It's one of the biggest questions, you know, I've been asking myself. You know, we talk about cars every other week, but where did they actually come from and when did they come into Africa? That's kind of something that, you know, I'm really excited to unpack. And hopefully we'll find out some new information.
Well, I'm a millennial and Wandi is a boomer.
I'm a Gen Zer. So, yeah.
No, you're not a boomer.
I think boomers are like my dad or my granddad.
I thought boomers were dogs.
I think boomers can be dogs, but they also like my dad and you know, older gen.
Yeah, the older gen, boomers. Well, no, I don't mean boomers are dogs. I mean, I remember a TV show called Boomer, which was a dog. Before your time.
Probably before the Gen Z times. So I'll definitely research it.
So there, I'm one up on you right out the gates, because the first motor car to globally hit anybody's shores was 150 years ago, with South Africa's first car arriving, believe it or not, 120 years ago.
120 years ago. That's like, I would have thought it would be soon. I thought it was like, you know, maybe 80 years. I know the first like car ticket was like in 1904 or something, so I would have expected it to be around then.
When does 120 years take us back? So we're in 2020, so that's 2020, that's 1900. So the first car hit our shores in 1900.
Yeah, 1900, straight off the bat of the millennia, like essentially cars arrived in South Africa. So that's news to me, and yeah, I don't know who else knew that.
Jeez, 120 years ago. The first car, first motor car in South Africa was a Benz Velo. I don't even know what a flipping Benz Velo is. Do you know what a Benz Velo is?
I don't, but I mean, taking from, you know, it's 1900, so I don't think it was anything with like a V8. It was probably just like bordering on a horse-drawn carriage with just like an engine on it. So do you know when that arrived in South Africa?
When?
1896, apparently.
1896. Well, I just Googled this Benz Velo, and it it looks like one of those cars with no steering wheel.
So how did you drive it?
They had sticks, Wandi, like an aircraft.
Ah, okay. Well, that's it. See, once again, learning new things every day.
They had sticks.
I don't think
you could drift this thing. It's got wheels the size of a bicycle wheel. You know, so this, yeah, it looks like a proper first generation car with no steering wheel. Yeah. So, you know how you operate one of those, what do you call them? Those farming implements or
the
graders.
It's like the attachments that you put on a tractor or something.
Yes. You operate them with handles. You don't have steering wheels with those.
Yeah. I mean, closest I've ever come to something like that was probably like a box cart, yeah, which had like little wires that you just pull left and right, and that would kind of dictate which direction you went. So I can almost, you know, relate to what it must have been like in 1896 when the roads were gravel and, you know, people were trying to get around.
Mm. So the first car in South Africa was in fact Benz. Was this related to Mercedes-Benz?
So as far as I know, yes. I know Carl Benz, him and his wife, if I'm not mistaken, essentially they made the first combustion engine car. I'm not sure if the Velo was exactly that, but I know that they were the first kind of sellers of cars globally. Okay. So they have a long history, long history.
Long history. So first seller of cars, the Benz, and the Mercedes-Benz showed its face in South Africa much, much later. The early days of the South African motoring industry were focused on American automobiles, Ford and Chevrolet. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of makes sense if you think about it. I mean, America, they were kind of pushing the Industrial Revolution quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I can imagine that they would sort of introduce themselves the most in most markets around the world. So there's no surprise there. American cars aren't really here in as much in South Africa as they had back in the day.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So then Henry Ford visited South Africa, to be exact, Port Elizabeth, and maybe that's why the manufacturing plants are down the Eastern Cape. Henry Ford visited Port Elizabeth in 1922, and by 1923, Ford had started its first assembly plant in PE. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Neither did I. I had to Google it.
Yeah. I'm sure, yeah, I had no idea, but, you know, thinking about the history of Ford and the automobile industry, it kind of makes sense that they would kind of spearhead, you know, industrialization, yeah, and I guess the production of vehicles everywhere else.
Exactly.
So, yeah, kudos to Henry for doing that.
And then General Motors came to the party and soon afterwards produced Buick's Oldsmobile and the Pontiac. I'm taking it this was in South Africa as well.
I actually have a love for Pontiacs. Like, yeah, my first love of cars actually began with a Pontiac. It's a love story that happened in like 2001 when my dad put on Knight Rider. And this epic fiber Trans Am just changed the course of history for me. But here I am today talking about it's again. So.
You have a passion for Knight Rider and and Kit. When that Kit series ended before you were born, what year were you born?
I was born in 95, and you know, there were still like reruns on like DSTV. And
there's still reruns on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, my ringtone actually, ironically, is still the Knight Rider theme song. Like, it's my passion. Passion, yeah. And it's funny, it's ironic because you can now talk to your car, which, you know, you couldn't do back then, but now you can do it. So,
did you know that in the mid 1960s, Ford and General Motors controlled over 60% of all local cars?
That's insane. So, Mercedes started, the first car in South Africa was a Mercedes, but by the 60s, they were kind of running things after Henry Ford kind of introduced the production plants in PE. So for like 30 years, they had proper control of the market. I did not know that.
And in the 1950s, German and British cars, and small cars particularly, became started to make an impact. So it's interesting that, you know, the might of the American economy had a massive impact on South Africa.
Yeah, for that long, I think it was a bit surprising. I would have thought the Germans would have come in a lot sooner than that, considering just how popular they are in South Africa now. But you saying that they came in a bit later, it makes sense that they, you know, held that dominance since then. Do you know which was like a top seller during that time?
I'd have to Google it, probably. Well, I know in the 1970s the Golf hit, so I could only guess what the car was that was popular back then, which was that City Golf, right?
Yeah, I mean, what, Volkswagen they're like the people's movers, you know. So I think it was around that time when globally they started to, you know, gain a lot of popularity. So I can imagine that at some point during that time, golf would have came into South Africa, and around that time, maybe even the GTI, you know, starting to start its insane dominance in the markets.
Unbelievable. I mean, look at the searches on Autotrader today. It's mostly VW Polos, VW GTIs. Yeah. You know, VW has a stronghold, and it started in the 1970s with the City Golf. I had a City Golf. It wasn't the one that said City on the side. It was a vomit green 1500. It wasn't the GTI. It was the 1500 1.5 liter Golf. It was like a vomit green color. It was the first one of the first ones with the, I don't know if you remember, the long lights versus the short lights. The
first, I do recall, yes.
Yeah, the very first ones had those short lights. Ah, Wandy does his research, even though he was born in 1995. And I had the one with the long lights, 1500cc, and I loved that car. That's one of the cars that made me fall in love with automotive, besides my grandmother's Datsun 120Y.
Yeah.
And then I fell in love with the GTI, but the GTI was just out of my price range. I owned a GTI. I owned a black GTI once.
Yeah.
I've never owned a GTI.
It's always been like a passion project car for me.
Yeah.
But I've just never been fortunate enough to be able to buy one. Maybe one day. Maybe the newer electric models might just become part of my garage.
Well, you know, and from Benz back in 1896 to Ford and GM, the Buick and the Oldsmobile and Pontiac Knight Rider cars. Today on Autotrader, we have 130 brands on the site, and that is about 1,000 models and about 16,000 variants. Now, we have to ask the last question. Electric cars. When was the first electric car in South Africa? I know you've done your research on this, Wendy, because you were definitely not alive in this year. I was.
Yeah, so as far back as, you know, the history books say, the first electric car that, you know, came to South Africa was a 1974 Enfield 8000. It was primarily used as a marketing stunt, but, I mean, when you look at this thing, you wouldn't even think it's an electric car. It looks like a Mr. Bean car that essentially they just kind of put batteries in this. But, you know, who knew that back in the 70s, essentially, South Africa had electric cars. I'm not sure Elon was, you know, behind that, but it's quite interesting to know that even back then, in the 70s, we were there.
Well, we were. I mean, so this Enfield 8000 that you talk about had 6 kilowatt electric motor powered lead acid batteries for a top speed of, wait for it, 77 kilometers an hour, and a maximum range of 64 kilometers. You know, I could get to work and back.
That's actually pretty impressive. I thought it would be a lot less than that. You know, I'd be interested to find out what is the first electric car like in the world. If this one was, you know, in the 70s already, we had 70 Ks.
I stand to correction, but I think the first electric car was Edison's car. Edison and Ford were working on a car. And electric cars actually precede ICE vehicles. Electric car was designed first, but the problem was the range. You can see that in this particular little noddy car, the Enfield 8000, where 64 kilometers is the range, and so that was the big problem. And so electric cars actually preceded ICE vehicles. I was surprised to learn that a couple of years ago as well. But here's an interesting thing. Eskom got their hands on this electric car and used it in promotional material.
That's a shocker right there.
Eskom.
Just considering the irony of the fact that Eskom was behind this or had something to do with electric cars back in the day.
The first electric car in South Africa, Eskom had their hands on it. I don't think it would have worked out.
That's crazy. I mean, they still power today's cars. So, you know, Eskom still powering electric cars.
that's a slogan. Eskom powering electric cars. You know, maybe it's something we can go go and get branded, because electric cars is a thing of the future. Now, let's get Chad on the line, because we're going to there we go. We're going to review the Audi Q8 45 TDI Quattro. And, you know, I've fallen in love with the Range Rover Velar. And Chad Lakoff, he's one of our top video journalists at Auto Trader. How's it, Chad?
How are you doing, George?
Good, and you? Good. Thanks for joining. So you tell me that, you know, I like the Range Rover Velar, but I should seriously consider this Audi Q8 45 TDI Quattro. Why is that?
The I don't want to say that the Velar is getting a little long in the tooth, but there's just the execution of the Audi just seems that much more polished. It lacks the sort of character that the Velar's got. The Velar just oozing character. But the Audi's just really pinned together beautifully. And you just know that all the tech's going to work all the time. Whereas in the Velar, you know, it's a lucky dip sometimes.
Okay. I mean, I like and maybe it's that that side of me that likes the Velar, because it's a sexy looking car. I mean, I've always thought the Quattro was a sexy looking car, but you know, what is the Q8? Is it bigger than the Q7?
It's essentially the coupe version of a Q7, but the Q7 also is getting a little long in the tooth. So it's sort of really due for a refresh. Instead of doing the Q7 and then the Q8 is like a coupe alternative to it, they have just gone straight off the bat with the Q8.
Okay, that's so very interesting.
It's got coupe styling. It is roughly the same size. It's a large, globally it's a mid-size SUV, but it's pretty much as large as we're going to get.
Okay.
You know, we're not getting Escalades and that sort of stuff. It's going to go up against the likes of BMW X6 as well, or Mercedes-Benz GLE Coupe, just to give you an idea of the sort of category in the field that it's playing in.
Okay.
Yeah. It is a stunning car. Like, I know that actually Lamborghini is using the RSQ8 engine in the Urus, if I'm not mistaken. But, I mean, from a styling point of view, it's absolutely, absolutely stunning.
I don't know. Jury's out on that one, hey? I was never overly fond of the styling. It has some intriguing attributes to it. But I've driven both the 55 TFSI, that one's lovely, it goes like stink, and now sampling it with the 45 TDI, you know, the diesel alternative to it. And the looks grow on you, which is kind of a good thing, because if we think of what Audi did in the sort of turn of the millennium when they gave us the first TT, that was wild and outlandish, and it really, you know, it was a bit of a Marmite car. You either liked it or you didn't.
A Marmite car. What's a Marmite car?
Well, either you like it or you don't like it.
You either like Marmite or you don't. I get it.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So with the TT, one of those, it was a polarizing vehicle. What it has been is it's been really, you know, it's aged gracefully. It's aged really well. You go back to that first generation TT and you look at it and you're like, yeah, that's not bad. Huh? That's still, it's not necessarily contemporary, but it's holding its own really well. And I think that's a bit of the case here with the Q8, is that you're going to find that it is a bit of a, you know, it's going to endure the distance rather in terms of styling than some of the others, like the earlier generation Q3s, which have just fallen completely off.
What's its point, though? Like, in terms of, you know, we understand what the Q7 was trying to do, but like in terms of the Q8, is this completely different markets? Like, what's the point of it versus what else is in the market?
You know, it's really strange, because this sort of experiment happened with the BMW X6, where, you know, there was half the marketing department sat there and said, you're going to cannibalize our audience for the X5, you know, and we're going to hurt sales there. And then the others were sitting there saying, well, you know, there's actually a separate demographic that's looking for a coupe-styled SUV. And I'm always going to go with coupe-style, because coupe, by definition, is two doors. And anything that's got four doors or five doors, I'm sorry, it's an SUV.
Yeah, it does.
It really works on, you know, it really works on my nerves. But when BMW did this, they saw that it wasn't cannibalizing any of the X5 sales. There was maybe a tiny, tiny, like 5% of the sales that were lost over to the X6. There just was a market that wanted coupe-like vehicles. And, of course, so many of the other manufacturers, and, of course, we're talking about the big German trio here, And let's include Porsche in that as well, because this will also go up against the likes of a Cayenne Coupe.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's kind of like it must be full of tech then.
It is. It is. It's tech out the wazoo. You got three screens. You've got the Audi virtual cockpit in front of you. I believe that's 12.3 inches. You've got a large 10.25 inch touchscreen infotainment system. And then below it, you've got another interface that handles things like phone shortcuts, climate control, seat heating, some of the vehicle settings. As a result, it's a lot smoother, cleaner, less cluttered on the interior. But you do. It is really, you know, read the handbook before tackling.
It's not like getting a new smartphone. I suppose it's like getting a game console. So what does the 45 mean? Is there any significance to the engine size?
So Audi shifted and changed their naming conventions from, you know, just actual displacement. 3.0 TDI, whatever it was, 1.9. And they moved on to a numbering system that denotes rather the power output rather than the engine size. Because we're moving away from displacement. Displacement is an antiquated measuring tool, because with turbocharger and supercharger and direct injection technology, and of course with hybrids as well, you can run a 1 liter engine that's going to keep up with the 2.5 liters of yesteryear. So displacement is really... It's not even on the table anymore when it comes to picking and choosing vehicles. And Audi sort of preempted this by giving them, 35, 45, 55, and that, depending on the amount of power it makes.
So how does 45 relate to the power? I mean, is it?
Well, the 45 is making 183 kilowatts in this instance. I'd really have to take a look.
Okay, so there's some sort of reference to that power.
Of where the start and end of the 45 range is.
Yeah.
But it basically puts it in a bracket. Let's say between 150 kilowatts and 220 kilowatts.
Okay.
Anything over that is then going to be a 55.
Interesting. Oh, so almost like maybe not, and Chad might disagree with me here, and I'll probably take his view. It's almost like what Mercedes has done in terms of their AMG models. They've got the 63, they've got the 55, 45. 53, and those weren't really engine displacements, were they?
They started out as that.
Okay.
They did start out as that. So when they started out with the C63s and the E63s and the likes, it was a bit of a nod back to the 6.3-liter V8 engines that they were using in the past, despite the fact that displacement was actually 6.2 liters. But then when they ushered into the turbocharger era, the displacement went down as the turbocharger technology improved. They went down to 4 liters. But to keep it sort of with the lineage, they just kept on renaming it, the 63. But it is true what you say there, in the sense that they're now bringing in the likes of the 53s, 45s, and the likes, just to give you an idea of what size engine, what sort of power output you can expect from the vehicle and where it slots into the range.
Oh, wow. And what is the Q8 going for?
It's not cheap. It is their flagship Q8, the 45 TDI. It's not cheap.
But so we can see this in the Blue Light Brigade soon then.
Chances are high. I think they're going to go for the 55, which is, believe it or not, the cheaper one of the two. You're looking at 1.573.
Yo.
And that's before options.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, what SUV do you get nowadays that's under R1 million?
You're going to get...
a Jimny.
No, listen, there's still plenty out there. You've got to take a look at proper seven-seaters. Remember, the Q8 is only a five-seater, doesn't give a seven-seater option. If you're going with a luxury midsize SUV, you're knocking on one bar straight off the bat. Exactly. But if you're going with the likes of a Fortuner or an Everest or a Haval H9, you're playing in the 700,000 rand market there, throw a bit of change at it. At 1.57, this is a little stiff. It's 1.51 for the more powerful petrol version.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're offering much the same. The drive is actually rather similar, although I did prefer the torque delivery from the diesel. Just made it a little more effortless in traffic, and it didn't seem as lurchy and as if it was straining on the leash.
Yeah. And that's surprising for a diesel, because, you know, I mean, I've driven two diesel cars in my life. I've only got a reference of two. Chad's probably got a reference of 200. My experience with diesels are that until the turbo is there, there's a lag, the turbo lag. It sounds like the Q8 isn't like that.
No, definitely not. It was I don't want to say an early diesel issue, but passenger diesel issue where there was, you know, it was a rather laggy system. But there are so many advances now with variable vane geometry turbos. The direct injection is helping a lot as well, although the diesel still works on a sort of common rail basis. That technology hasn't changed that much. But the turbocharger technology is just pushing it into a real workable, usable package that you hardly even notice it's a diesel. And it's pretty quiet running as well. So it's not the clattery diesels of old either.
Yeah. Lovely. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Chad Lakoff, our top video journalist at Auto Trader. If you want to go and have a look at Chad's review on the Audi Q8 45 TDI Quattro, that's a bit of a mouthful, go to autotrader.co.za and go and look under reviews and go and search for Chad's review. And you'll go and find out a lot more than you've learnt in the last 10 minutes. So there are 13 Q8s on Auto Trader today. So if you want to go and buy yourself one, go and go and get it. When was this car introduced, Chad? 2019?
So the Q8 with the 55, the petrol version, that was introduced in 2019. The TDI, the 45 TDI, was released this year. And I was taking a look on the site a little earlier. There's a demo model there with about 7,000 Ks on the clock.
Okay.
But they've lopped about 200,000 Rand off the list price.
There you go. Go and bid for that car.
Yeah, as a demo, it's probably got a couple of nice bells and whistles. So you could easily say that there's about a 300,000 Rand saving on that vehicle.
Price of a whole car.
How did you change your mind, though, George?
Chad has made me intrigued about this Q8, to be honest. So I'm going to go and have a look at it. Never been inside the current Q8, so I'm going to definitely go and have a look. Thanks, Chad. Chad Lakoff there, ladies and gentlemen, and see you next time, Chad.
Lovely. Thank you, guys. Have a great one.
Cheers. Well, Wandi, that gets us on to Ask Auto Trader. So seem to have come up with a couple of questions that people send in from time to time, and we have a platform, as you know, called Ask Auto Trader, which is at asktrader.co.za/ask. You can also get to it by /answers. They are motoring related questions, and Wandi's kindly pulled out three of them for us, and we're going to try and answer them.
Yeah, so every week we get these questions, and hopefully we can answer some of them. Some of them are tricky, but I think we might be able to answer a few of them. So the first question comes from TK, and she or he asked, I want to buy a car but can only afford a used car. So what are the most important things or considerations to ask themselves when considering buying a used car?
Okay, so buying a used car is obviously, can be risky business, but it can also be a pleasant experience depending on where you buy the car, who you buy the car from. So if you find your dream car, I would say first triple check the dealership's reputation. Go and Google them.
Yeah.
Go and check on social media. Go and check on Hello Peter. Go and see for yourself what other people are saying about the dealership.
I think on top of just triple checking, what you get from that is – when you buy a car, it's also an experience.
Yeah.
So understanding what other people have experienced from their buying journey will give you a lot of insight. So, yeah.
Do your research. Do your research. Don't settle for second best. There are plenty of cars out there. And a lot of people, especially with their first car, they go and they buy the first thing that they see. Don't do that. That's shop around. Shop around. A good idea. I know that you guys, millennials, as you put them,
the Gen Zers.
You guys don't like stuffing around. You'll look for the car, you'll go buy it. I would encourage you, look at least two. And then check the car's history,
I almost made the previous point, I actually almost made that mistake. But luckily my dad, who's a bit older and wiser, he was like, yo, let's go and just check out three more places, and I eventually found the perfect car. So
lovely.
Yeah.
And then do history checks on the car. There are tools, and there's a tool on autotrader.co.za that allows you to do a history check. You can buy a history check on the car. You know, and if it's a car that's in warranty, phone up a franchise dealer and ask about the vehicle. You know, there will be certain things that they can't tell you, like who the owner is you know, personal private information. But maybe a dealer will give you some sort of idea of whether the car's a good car or not. You know, but the best way to do that is get the current owner's permission. Because if you get the current owner's permission, the dealership will give you the information.
Yeah, no, that goes without saying. There's so many scary stories that you hear online about people not doing their research and finding out later on. It's not like the dealership even hid the information.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just you never looked deep enough to go and find these little nuances with this new car that you just got. So
yeah. So do your research. Okay, what's the next question, Wendy? I think we've got time for one more.
So Mlibs asked, can you help? I'm blacklisted, but I need a car. What do I do? This is a very common question that we get asked. Oh. So hopefully we can finally answer this question.
Well, you know, if you're blacklisted, it's a difficult one to answer. You know, most of the time people are blacklisted because they haven't been able to pay their bills. It's on the credit bureau. I mean, everybody knows the reasons why you get blacklisted. You know, don't try not to get blacklisted in the first place. I know it's tough, you know, and it's easier said than done sometimes because, you know, the South Africans are in a lot of debt, and you can get ahead of yourself. But, you know, the answer to the question is simple but complex. First, clear your name. You know, you need a good standing credit record in order to apply for vehicle finance. I don't think there's a way around this, but there's an alternative, Wendy. What's that alternative?
Well, as far as I know, I think, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but you could always rent to own.
Yeah, there's plenty of rent to own.
Yeah, I've heard some you know, people kind of getting around the blacklisting problem by renting to own. Because, you know, if you blacklist, it doesn't necessarily mean that you know, completely – a write-off.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, you're just kind of a risk. So renting to own is a good way to use your current standing to kind of, you know, still lock in financing for your car.
I suppose it's a stock gap, eh? So if you commit to clearing your credit name and then rent to own and then get out of the rent to own and get into a car, because rent to own carries higher finance costs, higher service fees, higher interest rates, all because of the risk. You know, the risk to the person renting you the car or the company renting you the car goes up.
Exactly. It's a quick kind of way to deal with, you know, especially now during, you know, the times that we're in. People need cars. Yeah. People need to drive. It's the safest way to get around right now. So, yeah, these alternatives are an awesome way to kind of get what you need for your needs.
All right. Well, I think we're quite out of time. And, you know, my name is George Minnie, and you have been listening to Auto Central. Any final thoughts, Wendy?
Let's try and see what happens within the history of South African cars going forward. I'm sure, you know, cars are going to be flying soon. We'll be drifting airplane cars, but, you know, let's
drifting
see what happens.
Drifting airplane cars.
Yeah. Who knows?
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's been another Auto Central show powered by Auto Trader. And join us next week for another power-packed session with myself, George Mini, and none other than Wandile Sishi. See you next time. We'll